Hello and oh my god. That was unexpected.
Yo.
Yeah, I'm fine.
That was a pure screech.
You know, maybe I'll keep that at the beginning. And then the intro music will start. Hello and welcome to Do the Right Thing, your weekly writing prompt podcast. I'm Matthias.
And I'm Jarvis.
Jarvis and I are aspiring writers, which means that we've set out goals and then we never meet them.
Exactly. So we're doing a challenge. Each week we set a timer. Our goal is to use 3 of 4 randomly generated words.
Then we come on the podcast, we read the stories we wrote, we talk about what we learned in writing them, and then we talk about listener-submitted stories.
We're simply here to help you do the right thing. A Doof Media production.
A Doof Media production. I'm sick.
Yeah, which
Jarvis,
is crazy.
Jarvis, I'm sick.
Because you were sick two episodes ago.
I was sick. Yeah, I was sick 2 freaking weeks ago, and I'm sick again. And I'm not sure if it's like the same thing or something else, but it's so annoying.
Yeah, I'm really sorry. And then also, you were busy all day today. So you were sick and running errands and getting stuff done, so.
Yeah. Yesterday, I was, like, alone for the whole day, and I had to, like, go to Care Now by myself, and go to the pharmacy by myself, and go grocery shopping by myself while I was sick. It's not a good time. So, yeah, so if my voice is weird, it's because of that. As far as I can tell, it's not contagious through microphones, so you guys should be fine, but, yeah.
But
just wanted to make sure you guys were aware.
I would just say, to be safe, put some earmuffs over your mics.
Right, yeah. It was just put like a nice like sanitary covering. Oh. Yeah, I was going to suggest that a condom would work really well. Yeah. I mean, it's made for that basically.
Yeah. It's a ear condom for all ear-based well,
so what's going on in Doof before we get into the episode proper?
As of right now, all I know about Doof is that we have some exciting new episodes out. Specifically, we have what's it called? Right now, Doof is doing a Stephen King Gunslingers podcast.
That's a description. Basically, the Dark Tower podcast has started up. I'm very excited about it. Scott and Matt are going to do a We've Got Worm treatment on Stephen King's Dark Tower universe, which I think is a multi-book series. So that's really exciting. I'm really excited about that. And then, of course, on our end, the big thing going on is the Doof the Right Thing contest, which is ending today. If you're listening on the day that it comes out. Yeah, if you're listening to any day after this episode comes out, if it's not Monday, then it's too late. But you can always participate next time, and patrons get to vote. But yeah, we've been doing we're hoping to make this quarterly, but a writing prompt contest where you'll take your stories off of this podcast and then edit them and then submit it. So if you still have time, if you're listening the day of and you haven't done it yet, please do. Just pick out any old story. I would say just go ahead and rewrite it. In the United States, it's Martin Luther King Jr. Day, so you might have some extra time to do stuff. And send it in and have some other people read it and enjoy it. But on to more personal things. Other than me being sick, how have we been, Jarvis? How have you been?
Well, I've been pretty good so far. So as you know, it's been the first week of school for us, and that has been my week. So I thankfully, after all that, decided to do a little something for me, right? So I sat down and I wrote a story that I enjoyed very much. So
Is that what you wrote for the podcast this week?
Yes, for Do the Right Thing.
Very cool. Did you say you wrote another fan fiction?
It is not a fan fiction per se. It is within the same world that I've been writing for the last couple episodes, because I am a one-trick pony.
Can you write
a
fan fiction of your own work?
Yes. Yes, you know. No. No, you what? Can't, because if
okay, yes, you know.
Okay. If you write something that is your own, doesn't it become canon?
What if it's not canon? What if J.K. Rowling writes another thing where, like, Harry falls in love with Voldemort?
Yeah, but
like during the events of Harry Potter.
But see, here's the thing. I don't think you can be a fan of yourself. And that's the whole point of fan fiction. So,
because you are your own worst critic.
Exactly. So, like, if it's just you, it's just fiction, dude. That's it. That's all it is.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. Okay, let's get into the episode proper. We've dicked around for too long. All right.
Back on track.
Jarvis, what were the words this week?
So, the words for this week were comb, seashore, purring, and squealing.
Yeah, so quite an interesting mix of words.
Yeah, none of them for me mean anything to anything else.
Well, that's not true. Squealing and purring both indicate a creature of some sort.
Yeah, but like
for sure.
So at least when like I saw them, it gave me nothing. Like I had no idea whatsoever what I would write about.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, they were, two of them were very evocative of animals. Yeah. And I think a lot of people went that route a little bit.
Yeah.
And then for me, comb and seashore were kind of like both, well, like beachy, like you comb the beach looking for stuff. And so I ended up writing a nautical story, basically. And even though the word seashore wasn't actually in the story, we definitely had it play a part in inspiring what I wrote.
Yeah, yeah. I saw that, like, that was a like really common trend in the stories, where like either it was about some sort of creature doing something, or it was just about water and very mm-hmm. oceanic, which I guess makes sense.
Yeah, and the main exception to this was people writing along older stories, which was not uncommon.
Mm.
There was at least two people that were writing off of older stories, yeah. Where, I mean, it just becomes very obvious that, like, the words aren't necessarily what they're centering the story around, which is more than okay, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was Sarah Penguin and Ace of Swords who added to older work,
so.
Which I think is honestly fantastic, because as it keeps going, it progressively gets better, so it's really exciting to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, all right. Is there anything else we want to talk about before we get into the words?
No. Let's just go ahead and roll into the stories.
Sure. What should we know going into your story?
All right. So, my story takes place, as I said before, in the same world I have been writing in for quite some time.
Right. Just the quickest summary, the quickest two-sentence summary. For those that might not have heard those episodes.
All right, cool. So the world that I am writing in is basically this utopian-esque place run by this man named Waif, who is a billionaire who basically kind of took over the world in some way, but he's not a bad guy. And then there are these...
I think dystopia is the right word, actually.
Yeah, well, it's a mixture of both. Matthias.
Right.
A perfect
right.
mixture.
Sure, yes.
But okay. Yeah, so there are these towns that surround the main one, and the quickest summary is that they all have something shady going
right.
on. Right. Yeah, and that's kinda it. It is sci-fi, cyberpunk-esque noir.
It's a grimy place,
action.
Yeah.
Grimy, yeah. It is a grimecore.
Okay, great. Well, all right, let's get into it. What's the name of your story?
The name of my story is System Hair. The last thing I wanted was sand in my veins, crystallizing and adding weight to half-clogged arteries. Sand was plentiful in the outback. Far as the eye can see, there's nothing but rolling hills of darkened sand. Nowhere for an AI to treat his wounds. Nowhere before it. Why did I come out here? Neglect to wrap up a tear in my abdomen turned into a muskrat-feeding frenzy. Fuckers ate a hole through my liver and started gnawing at my respiratory processor. When I came to and bade them way, the runt of the litter held on to some meat and fled, ripped chunks of my innards halfway across creation. They left him roasting in the sun. I thought I was done. Clear, virtuous fluid that kept my systems in order was emptying all over the sand. Rocks and dust and corrosive minerals flooded my veins like poison. My screen started to go black. But then the beacon flickered in my mind. The skyscraper amalgamation of all knowledge and wisdom above that of the dominant species. Where our source code was made by the brightest minds and fullest hearts. At its peak, it was the Tower of Babel for every form of life. Utopia built to marvel at that which biological hands created. Then the artificial hands took the stage and precipitated the fall. The vision pulled me together. I was manufactured in Waif, but worked in Crawford. Factory setting made me a scrap shield for CPT raids and riots. Revolutionaries loved sinking bullets into me. It was purpose for my life. I was told I loved catching the bad guy, and because of it, I did. Then October came around and Croft froze over. It never rained in Crawford. But on the 12th, from morning till night, the snow came down by the foot. Even in that, we still had to comb the lines. I was partnered up with a rookie AI. Chief Wilcox, Tass's best boy, was showing him the ropes. The new guy was a few years off script. Paint camp bumped him in the head, and he started thinking for himself. At the time, I admired him. Heard so many stories of us offing ourselves when our programming uninstalls. Takes a strong person to stick it through. After leaving the precinct and crossing over to the black side, we turned down Side A Street. Gang-related purring was hollered in the air. On the black side, Side A is filled with booming bodegas and mom-and-pop shops, unkempt and aged twice as hard. Across the street was a chalk line reaching far north and far south. Crossing the line would put you on the upside of Central Crawford. Few feet from that line, there was a wall, tall enough to shield Side A from the snow, but not the chill. The weather made it a ghost town still. Rookie Clemens was asking a lot of questions. They didn't have lines in the sand where he's from. So as per protocol, I stopped the car and quoted the books. The mass immigrant population from before Waif built our capital brought a host of cultures. The cultures mixed and couldn't get along. So in Crawford, we've unmixed, based off of common separators across our cultures. Clemens was having a time with the history. As it stands, anyone from outside Craw just thinks all the civil warring kind of died down. It did die, after a disproportionate sliver of the population. To keep the peace, they gave each side what they wanted. Separate but equal is rightful, but not easy to market. Far behind Clemens, I saw two black lion jackets dip down an alley. Before he could talk, I was already out the car and crossing the street. Quick enough, he caught up with a hand on his taser. Rookie mistake. The two fit the description. The black and brown fur coat, white steel knuck gloves, racial ambiguity. These are the things the situation told me, that they will lead me to their den. At a distance, I could hear them chopping it up. Rations were low today. The one on the left had more patches. Obviously a general. Talked with his hands. His partner on the right didn't move round much, and was heavyset for his jacket. But Joy got the best stuff from Waif. Even got him past customs. The situation told me drugs. The patched up one passed a pack of diapers to the other, slow and concealed. They turned down a maze of alleys till they got to a flight of stairs at the end of it. The two lines clacked down and banged on the door to get let in. At the moment, I told Clemens to go and phone backup. New guy was eager to see some action, but respected the process and hoofed off. I followed down the stairs and put an ear to the door. Over the hum of an old light, it sounded like four, maybe five people getting high and cursing CPD. Something in the far back squealing. But I waited for the magic word, cell. as soon as that's in the air, I can raid and search the problematic area in the city. Seconds later, I have them all at gunpoint. The situation told me a lot. The Lions were delivering diapers to these three women. Their living room and dining was riddled with wrappers and paraphernalia. In an ajar room to the back, I saw a scale and Black Lion memorabilia. Everyone was nervous. The Lions, angry. They were all crowded around the table, picking through the rations that looked plentiful instead of low. Then I noticed the baby, tucked under a woman's breast, a familiar diaper on it. Too many times with drugs in Crawford, even those taken into evidence find their way back on the street. No matter how many moles we prosecute, there's always another hole for more to wiggle through. So the situation told me to ruin the contraband. The pin struck. The baby popped. Instead of coke or meth, cotton and bile fell from its diaper. 50 years later, and I've been retired for a long time. Crawford pension was good to me, so I opened up my own coffee and e-drink shop on Side A. The years didn't change much but a couple of paint jobs, but I felt stuck there for my obligations. Business was good, even when it snowed. Had the only shop for a bit that accept AIs as customers and treated Black Site residents to a good cup of coffee. In my personal life, I mentored at Off-Script Services, me being 39 years off then. Overall, I was enjoying the life I've made for myself. I had my first drive 76 years off-script, and it made a lot of sense. The source code the data is taken from fits perfectly into all the holes you lose when you go off. To think a small spray-painted flash drive plugged into my central processor got me here. I just started walking. Walking down Side A, crossed to the south line and snuck out a hole behind Crawford. The whole time up till the moment those muskrats tore into me, I had utopia in my data. Why did I come out here? I felt the beacon had something I lost.
All right, wonderful story, Jarvis. I really enjoy the world building here, and specifically like the world building surrounding this character. It feels very natural. There's not like any like big part where it's like, oh, the AIs were constructed in 20,132, and they use this kind of software. Like, none of that's in there. It's very character focused. Mm-hmm. I particularly like the exploration of the idea of off script of, or just like that as a shorthand for an AI slowly like learning its personality. I can like, it's very evocative of like what the process might look like.
Yeah.
Like I can picture like a, you know, I guess this is like a police droid, right? Basically. Yeah.
Cop droid.
Yeah.
He is the like scrap shield basically. So
RoboCop.
Like, Ryanman. Yeah.
So this RoboCop like starts off with just being like, how are you, citizen? And like, like saying, you know, going, you know, following a script. And then every now and then, increasingly over time, it says something that's like close to, but not exactly what it's supposed to say. It says, so instead of like, how are you, citizen? It's like, it is a fine morning today, citizen, right? Where it's like, that's not what it normally says.
Yeah, but it's still almost there. Yeah.
Yeah, and then it just goes more and more until it's like, fuck you.
The full 180, yeah.
I'm a robot.
And I know that whole concept is what kind of started me to want to write this. Because if you have played Detroit Become Human or like any real game that has to do with AI, there is always some sort of a conversation about them going off script, about them foregoing their programming and becoming human, basically, because they have that capability. So with that idea, I kind of wanted to set it in this world because I know a huge aspect that I haven't really explored in this world is that there are like androids, right? And there are other races here besides the dark and brooding man that lives in the weekend, right? So I think that's kind of what started this. And basically, as I wrote, I just kind of put things together, trying to like build it towards more world building, I guess.
Right. Yeah, I really like the cop story, which is like the center of the story. And it's very illuminating of what this world is like. It almost makes me think that this robot is like unintentionally racist a little bit. It's like,
yes,
you know, it's policing a marginalized neighborhood and stuff like that. And it's like, it doesn't even realize how, you know, that might not be good.
Yeah, I mean, like what, like, it is apparent that one of the deciding factors that is written into his code is that if they are racially ambiguous, then they might be part of this terrorist, this like terrorist sect. Which, I mean, I don't know. I kind of wanted to, because if it is a dystopia, there has to be a like really glum part about it. I know within this city, I haven't talked about anything, and I just thought, hey. What if there's a racial civil war going on without anyone knowing?
And without like, anyone knowing.
And like what that will do for everything else, and it boils back down to this cop.
Right. So I like that, especially when it ends I did have a little trouble parsing what exactly happened. And I think I was confused by the diapers in the first place, because I was like, so they pass, you know, a pack of diapers from each other, right?
Yes.
And we get some kind of clue that it might be drug-related, but I was like, I was confused as to whether or not it was actually literally just diapers that are just getting smuggled through, because this is that much of a dystopia where, like, decent diapers are, like you can't get them, basically. Yeah. But they actually are, like, full of drugs or something.
No, they are diapers.
Okay.
And I think that is one part that I feel that I wanted to work on a lot more, and it is establishing this unreliable narrator.
I got a little bit of irony within the pair of lines. The situation told me drugs. The patched up one passed a pack of diapers to the other one, slow and concealed, which is like, it's funny, because it's like, it told me drugs and then there's diapers.
No, go ahead.
I just like it. I found it unclear on which it was supposed to be, basically. Like, it felt like it was a little confusing in an unintentional way, where like I feel like it definitely could be, like, I feel like maybe the way to make it more clear would be like if the robot just for a second was like, they probably hid drugs in the diapers, because otherwise I was just like, I was just going along with the robot because I couldn't think of a... I was like, if these are drug-filled diapers or just normal diapers, like, I'm going to get a hint either way, basically.
I didn't have that hint. Think, like, one thing that I think I wanted to work on more that could have probably cleared that up was... basically the audience understanding that in this kind of like flashback you are watching this person following their script, and that it is unreliable because the script is coming from a place that is inherently racist on like a institutional level. And I think that honestly comes with taking more time to really put in all of that world building. But yeah, I like was really worried about if that would come across and if it made sense that like, oh, the thing that kind of put him off script was that he killed a innocent baby.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Like I got all of that, but I also didn't, you know? Like, I felt unsure. I was like, that's an interpretation, but I don't know if it's correct, basically.
Okay.
There was probably just, like, a little bit more that I could have gotten for hints. On the baby part, right? So this is, then I noticed the baby tucked under a woman's breast, a familiar diaper on it, right? So I was like, How is it, like, familiar, basically? Like, I just need, like, a little bit more clues on that. And then, specifically, with, like, you know, the baby popping, which I really like that as the term. I really do. It's mm-hmm. great. Like, it was a shocking moment. It really was. I was a little bit confused by the pen struck, because I wasn't sure what the pen was.
Oh.
Like, did he just, like, poke it with a pen?
It is gun or? Anatomy.
Okay.
So, like, a pin is basically the thing that strikes the bullet, and then it shoots off.
Ah. Okay. Well, oh, you wrote P-E-N.
Oh. Oh, no.
Not pin.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, okay, that's where we off my reading. Okay, that makes sense. We could also cut that or something.
No, it's fine.
Okay. Yeah, so I just found that, like, a little bit unclear. But okay, that makes a lot more sense. Yeah, so the pin struck, the baby popped, Jesus Christ. Instead of coke or meth, cotton and bile fell from its diaper. I thought, like, I really like, you know, the coke or meth in, instead of those, it's things that are more innocent. And I do like that it's not blood, because blood is, like, so obvious.
Yeah.
But cotton and bile were just, like, a little bit too ambiguous for me, where I was like, but, like, is it a baby?
Oh, is it? Okay.
Because it's
okay.
Cotton, and it's like, vomit? Like, where's the bile from the vomit coming from? So yeah, I don't really know exactly what you would do to switch it, yeah.
Yeah, so I get that, because I know I was talking about the cotton from the diaper, because obviously right. I know what diapers are made out of.
Right.
And bile.
So I feel like...
You know, go ahead.
Yeah. Like, cotton can actually stay. Like, I like it as, like a, it makes it less intense. It's just, like, bile. Maybe something, like, a little bit more evocative of, like, oh, shit, it's dead.
Well, what else is in the human body? There's blood?
There's bile? Yeah, blood, mostly.
Cotton and leg. That doesn't make any sense.
Maybe just, like, fluids.
Cotton bodily fluids. Ew.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I will sleep on that one. I'll sleep.
Well,
on that
it, one. Okay, maybe I'm just nitpicking. Like it still worked for me. But yeah, no, I really like that shocking moment and just like
and
oh
then,
shit.
So I have a question right after that.
Yeah.
The whole section about him owning the coffee shop and like where his life is now, and then him taking the drive and all that. How do you feel about that? Because I was very unsure while I was writing it because up to that point, I kind of thought, oh, wait, this is a very nice end for this section.
Yeah.
How do I get him to the desert?
Right, right. No, the thing is, like, that came across.
Okay.
That feeling, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that was, yeah, the baby popping... Well, like that, I did feel that the last like couple paragraphs that kind of felt unnecessary,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe just like, it, you know, if I was going to suggest a different thing you put in there, I mean, I liked that information, I liked it, but it obviously is just like not the best place for it.
Yeah,
like maybe it would have been better for just like one or two paragraphs of just like, and here I am now in the desert.
Well, okay.
Off script for so long, stuff.
So, like in that section, what is written was like one idea, right? But mm-hmm. but the other one, and I want to see if you think this might work more, was that basically I will follow him on like the months afterwards, and you see mm-hmm. the effects of it, and then you see when he like when he finally goes off script. And then it just jumps because you don't really need to know after that, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, that definitely would be cool, yeah.
Interesting.
Maybe, especially if you, like, set up with a repetition and then break that repetition.
Okay, yeah, something to think about. Because I would love to revisit this. I Yeah, so, yeah, thank you for the feedback. I'll definitely take it to heart.
Well, I mean, I really did enjoy it. I like alien perspectives. Obviously, this one's not, like, super alien, but it is a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, I also really like the beginning of the sand in my veins. I thought it was a drug at first, and then it was like, oh, shit, it actually is sand. And then getting eaten alive, basically, even if you're not actually biological, it's interesting. Yeah. I enjoyed a lot of this story. If you were to rewrite the story, Jarvis, what would you change?
If I were to rewrite it, I would probably go back from the beginning, top to bottom. Honestly, I would have to work on the beginning, really setting up what the Outback looks like, and I want to work mostly on the entire diaper situation, kind of
okay,
giving the audience exactly like it, one way to lean. Or the other, and then I would just have to rework the entire last part, kind of make the ending feel truer to the story that I'm trying to tell, and not where I want it to end up.
Here's a little idea that popped in my head that I thought might be cool is, so you have the ending of that scene with the baby popping, right? Yeah. And you don't really describe what it looks like, and then we cut to the robot's like eviscerated body with like guts and stuff everywhere. And so we immediately, like, go from, like, oh, what was that image like? And then we're like, oh, that's a horrible image.
I see. Okay.
That's the idea.
So, like, a jump back, jump forth. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, playing hopscotch with the story.
Right. And then what do you think you learned from the story?
I think what I learned from the story is that... I think something that really helped me this week was deciding to really take my time with this to a certain extent, like really fill out a block of time for me to write.
Yeah.
So I think what I learned is that next time I'm going to do that more often because I enjoyed what I wrote, and I think I came up with some pretty solid ideas that I want to take with me to the future. So yeah.
Hell yeah.
All right, cool. Well, going back off stories that we enjoy, you know, there's like The Great Gatsby, or there's Count de Monte Cristo, or it's Snow Crash, right? But
okay,
a story that I really love and really want to hear right now is a story that you wrote, Matthias.
Okay. Oh, this is your transition.
Yes.
Okay, it was a little clear. Okay. Amazing transition complete. Let's talk about my story.
As usual,
not that much to say here. I was aiming to make something a little bit sad. I don't know how much it succeeded. When I'm sick, I don't really feel emotions as much, so that makes things harder to do. So, I hope you feel bad reading this.
I will, don't worry.
Okay. So this story is called Beast in the Mists. The sea was like boiling bottle glass, dark green and roiling. The ship was pitched up over one wave before crashing down the other side, each wave a mountain to crest and tumble over. As gravity shifted under Captain Bellick's feet, and seemingly around his body, a world shifting, the salt and cold spray spattered his face and beard. It was in his nostrils. He wiped his face. He was drowning, standing up. "Any sign of it?" Captain Bellick bellowed. Atop the upper deck of the small steamship, Georges lowered his spyglass. He bent over the railing to yell back, "I can't see nothing in the storm, Captain." "Damn," he said. He looked back up. "Keep combing the seas. The beast should come today." He could feel it. Today was the day of reckoning, and everything had to go according to plan. He would find it. He would capture it. Georges yelled again, interrupting Bellick's thoughts. "Maybe we should turn back, Captain. The storm is hard, and we can't see anything. It hasn't shown today. We've dropped half the meat already. We'll try again another day." "No!" The reply was in surprising fierceness. "The beast only comes out in storms like this." Some of the legends said that the beast made the storm with its movements. Or maybe it was the storm. "We'll find it tonight. I can feel it, Georges." "Aye, Captain." He returned to fruitlessly scanning the horizon. Bellick passed several crew members on his way to the captain's cabin. They were blinking away the spray. The lower deck was slick with blood, and the scent of salt and meat was everywhere. Bellick shoved the door to the cabin open, letting in the thunder and rain before he was able to shut it. "How was it out there?" his son asked. His son was small and sat on the bed, arms wrapped tight around the ship's cat. The skinny creature was clearly uncomfortable, occasionally struggling for a moment to get out of his grip. Bellick didn't answer for a moment, instead traveling across the tiny cabin to the journals on the other wall. He read through some of his old notes. "All the tales have the beast being given tribute of some kind. A beautiful woman chained to a pole, or a prized cow left in the surf to be drowned. There's always meat." Bellick thought for a moment. The chum wasn't doing enough. He knew it was in the area. He knew. It was a matter of time before he found it. He had the harpoons ready, and no beast of this world would be stronger than a 30-ton coal-fired steamship. It was just a matter of drawing it in. He tapped the pencil to his chin before jotting down another note. "There's always meat. But maybe there's more to it." "It's storming," he finally said. His boy smiled wanly. "I know. Little Jimmy here doesn't like it. I got him purring, though, before the door opened. I just don't want him to run off." "This is the safest place for him," Bellick looked his son in the eye. "And for you." He nodded quickly. Internally, Bellick sighed. The boy had no heart for the sea. Perhaps it would build character to have him above deck in the cold and spray and hurt. But no, best to not let him get in the way. "Stay," Bellick said, and headed out the door. He headed to the upper decks where he could examine all. All around, crew were at work, steering, keeping the engine alive, cutting flesh off cow carcasses and throwing them into the sea. The sea was dark green, but the trail in the water behind them was red. They were moving slow. Enough to create distance from the chunks of bobbing meat, but not so fast to outrun them. At first, Bellick had been worried that the fish might eat the bait too early. But it was clear now that the storm had driven them all to deeper waters. There was only one creature that would come out in this weather. So why wasn't it here? Bellick grabbed the spyglass from George's. The waves rose and fell like shifting curtains, but they never revealed more than more waves, more dark clouds. Occasionally, lightning would strike far in the distance, and the crack of thunder would shake the deck as much as any crashing wave. The stories all said the beast came in storms, attracted to the bait. It struck him. All the sacrifices he'd read about had been alive when they'd been sacrificed. "God damn me," he said. "The sacrifice has to be alive." Georges, next to him, thought for a moment. "Well, we don't have any live animals on deck, sir. The only ones are, well, little Jimmy, the cat, and, well, us," he laughed nervously. Bellick had a hard look in his eye. "Get the cat." The blood drained from George's face. "Sir, what?" Bellick grabbed the lapel of his first mate's shirt. "Don't you get it, man? Tonight is the night we find the beast. The night we make history. The night it all becomes worth it." He released George's. The man was taken aback, but gathered himself together as best he could. He was loyal. "Get the cat, Georges. Besides, if all goes well, the cat may even live." The cat was in a cage from the back, and that was hoisted from a small cargo crane on the back deck, so that it dangled over the water behind the ship. It was yowling and squealing and shaking the cage. The air was different now. It made the crew uneasy. It was still storming, but less random, more purposeful. Mist streamed in all directions, gathering along the deck as the ship pitched up and down. While the crew and mists shifted around him, Captain Bellick stood still, proud in the center. He could feel it, now more than ever. It was close, almost within his grasp. The crew members were at the harpoon stations, mounted on the back of the ship. The waters in front of them were frothy and red, the air filled with copper and salt. The sky was dark, and the wind was howling. Thunder rumbled in the distance. Bellick's son was standing by on deck, the only way he could have been separated from his beloved cat. He was clutching the side railing as the ship moved, eyes fixed on the dangling cage. His knuckles were white. And that's when it went wrong. The mists swirled, figures forming and disappearing. A snake's head, a crocodile's open mouth, teeth. Then the chain to the cat's cage plunged before being arrested in its movement and swinging out over the sea and back. The cage door was now partially open, and the ship's cat was screaming. The boy yelped, but didn't move. "Captain, what should we do?" Georges asked. Bellick just raised a hand sharply. "Ready the harpoons." The mists continued shifting, shapes and faces and mouths threatening to devour them all. The cage continued swinging, and the cat barely hung on. It swung once more, and then the cat lost its grip. Two things happened at once. The cat fell toward the ship, and the boy ran forward to catch it. In that long, slow moment, Bellick only saw that the boy was crying, before he slipped on the blood and rolled off the back of the ship into the ocean. Before the boy hit the sea, it almost seemed that the mist had formed behind him into a great mouth before he disappeared into it. Bellick screamed. The harpoons were fired. But they meant only water. They looked for the boy until daylight, but he was nowhere to be found. The cat had somehow made it back on the ship, though. That's the end of the story.
What an amazing nautical hunt. Honestly, that was a really story, dude. Like, it had all of the elements. Like, I absolutely love the character of this captain who's obsessed with finding this beast, very Moby Dick like. And I also love the character of George, who is the like mental adversary to this captain, who is of course on a ship and doing the same things, but is wondering to what extent. And I think honestly the ending is super solid. Like, I really loved it. So honestly, just like, what brought this idea about for you?
You know, it's funny, I wrote the first like two paragraphs and I like completely forgot what I was doing.
Yeah,
so like, I don't know what the original story was. Maybe it was something like this. But I really did like the idea of like a Moby Dick like character. I've actually never read Moby Dick,
so you're a fake writer.
I'm a fake writer. Wow. That's true. I'm a fake English major. Okay. That someone is looking for a beast. I thought that was interesting. And then as I continued on, you know, I was like, okay, let's put some praying in. So I had the cat in there, and I was like, oh, what if the cat's part of the thing? And then like the boy really likes the cat, so I was like, ooh, what if he dies instead? So it came together pretty naturally. It was a discovery thing, but it was discovered pretty early, I feel. Yeah. Enough time for me to really set things up.
Yeah, and I think like that's probably the best part about this, is that it seems like you took that time and how it slowly built, right? Mm-hmm. At first they're throwing chum, and then they're like, we need more blood, we need more meat. And I love that the escalation was very telling, right? That eventually there would come this point where they would run out of meat. And personally, I thought that he was just gonna start throwing crew members over. I thought he was this obsessed with this beast. I just absolutely love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I did want to get it to be really clear that he's, like, pretty driven. One thing is that I intentionally made it really clear that he does not actually care for his son that much. Like, yeah. When he goes into that room, he, like, ignores him for, like, 4 paragraphs. which is, like, not cool. Don't do that. Yeah, he's very specific on what he's looking for. And then, you know, the fact that it's the son that gets, you know, sacrificed in the end, I really wanted it to, you know, be a classic, like, oh, hubris, you know, he thought that he could just, like, sacrifice a cat, but, like, what really matters is that these are things of value that are valuable to you. Mm-hmm. You know, is this supposed to be, like, you know, the Perseus part of his myth where he, like, after he kills Medusa, he, like, encounters this princess that's gonna get eaten by a giant serpent or whatever, and he, like, you know, turns into stone, but, like, you know, the classic, like, chained to a pole, and the giant monster is gonna eat you, and
yeah,
like, you have to do that, yeah. So, but in all of those, it's always, like, something of, like, supreme value. Like, if it's not, you know, the princess, it's at least, like, the most beautiful woman in the kingdom or whatever. Yeah. It's not just, like, the asshole that no one likes, right? It's not actually the meat that matters.
Yeah, because it's that damsel in distress type story.
Right. Or if it's like a prized, like, you know, if you're gonna sacrifice a cow, don't sacrifice your shitty old cow. You sacrifice your nicest one, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, he's trying to sacrifice a cat that he does not give a shit about, right? he doesn't even gender it in his narration. And then so the beast is gonna take something else.
Yeah, it's gonna be him.
Yeah.
So one question that I have is, so yeah, one question that I do have is that have you taken any thought into what this creature looks like?
No, actually I think I like ended up more implying that it was like made of mist, basically. Cause in the end I ended up leaving it ambiguous as whether or not the boy just like falls into the water or if it's eaten by the mist.
Okay. Oh yeah, so I did like how it was left slightly ambiguous. I mean, me being a hopeful, I was, when it said that it seemed like it was being enveloped as something in something that looked like a mouth, I was like, "Ah, oh, it's definitely Dagon. It has to be."
Yeah. A little Lovecraftian, yeah.
Yeah, but
just like a small thing that I probably would have changed is being a little less telly of like what the shapes in the mists are. Like as I was writing it, I just like wasn't sure what exactly to show there. But in retrospect, like naming, you know, a crocodile's mouth and those kind of things is probably not the best. I think what I could have done better was instead just like describe a crocodile's mouth, right? Like, uneven teeth in the mist, and then like a bulbous snout with scales and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly,
rather than being explicitly, yeah.
I mean, one thing that I really liked was how much you didn't tell us, right? How it when we would see these things in the mist, it would keep us guessing, and I think it really worked tremendously to your benefit, because it begs into question how rational everyone that is there really is. Because of course, you know, like the whole reason why we have all of these myths is because people just went out to the sea, saw something, and then started telling everyone that they saw like God, basically. So,
right,
interesting, yeah.
Like who knows if there actually is a beast or not? You know, the boy could have drowned. So, you know, like he was swept over the water. You know, maybe he just hit his head.
Yeah, bumped his head, and then dunzo, like at the end of Bridge to Terabith.
Yeah, exactly.
So after putting all this work into it, if you had a chance to go back rewrite, it had an unlimited amount of time, what would you do?
I think I would just like tidy it up a bit. I think I might, and on a second pass, make the captain care about his son more.
Yeah.
And maybe just like also have mixed feelings of just like, oh, I wish my son was more manly, that could do stuff on the ship, and also, like, explain why he's taking the boy on the ship, right? Like, it doesn't have to be, like, a logical explanation, but just, there's probably some character stuff that can go in there, you know? Like, maybe he brought them on the ship just to be like, oh, you'll witness my greatest moment of your father, or just, like, being around the sailors is good for you, or something. But, like, yeah, so just complicate that relationship a little bit. And then just, like, make that final moment better. Make it, like, super ambiguous, but also horrifying.
Yeah.
You know, I've been listening to a lot of the Magnus Archives, so it was a little bit inspired by that of, that's a horror podcast that was also, reviewed on MediaMD. So if you like that podcast, go listen to, Elliot and Ruben and also Matt, talk about it. Yeah, it's a little bit of that horror of, like, giant things in the dark.
Nice, nice. I mean, honestly, all that really came across. I mean, honestly, that's my personal wheelhouse. That's what I liked. And I think that's why I enjoyed this one as much as I did, really. But is there anything really, and it could be small or it could be huge, that you have learned through doing the right thing this week?
I think I got better at, like, doing description. There's mm-hmm. a little bit more that I would do about just varying sentence length, but I felt pretty confident about, like, you could picture this dark and stormy night. Yeah, just another motivation for me to dig down on the emotions. Just some small stuff, but, you know, every little improvement helps.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for telling us about your story, Matthias.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so that's all I have about my story this week, basically. So we can move on to the next section.
All right, which is our listener-submitted stories. Thank you so much to everyone, including your mother, who sent in a story this week.
I think
it was fantastic. We actually got a huge turnout. I mean, I think we got, I'm going to say, two new writers. Am I right?
That sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, so... this week, the first story up is going to be by Calinero985. Well,
first we should announce which ones we're reading.
You're super right.
So we'll be reading five. We'll be talking about five stories today. Stories by Ghost Pac-Man 4, Stuck in Reddit Factory, Lost Carcosin, Shin 7, and Calinero985. If you were not one of these people, don't worry. Every single time that you write, your chance of getting selected goes up. So be assured in that next time your chance your chance of getting selected has gone up. We are also going to spoil all of these stories pretty significantly.
Yeah, so please go right now. If you haven't read any of these, go and read them. I mean, you should take these stories in their most pristine place possible. So please go and read them and then come on back. Don't worry, we will wait for you.
That's right. And they're absolutely worth reading, especially they're worth reading ahead of time so you don't get spoiled. So I'd highly recommend you go do that.
Exactly. So first up will be Stuck in Red Factory.
Okay.
With One Day.
So Stuck in Red Factory wrote a very very short story, probably under 300 words, probably under 200 yeah. actually. And so this is this interesting, a couple of paragraphs describing from a sensory perspective, basically a cat's perspective. However, we don't, like, fully understand that until a couple of paragraphs in, which is pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. And it's because it's said in an ambiguous way where it's like if you're viewing it from a human perspective, you'll interpret things a different way than if you understand that it's a cat. The dinner was held down. So we're like, okay, that's just a weird way to phrase putting dinner down. A pause, yeah. A listen, a clattering in the kitchen. So we're like, okay, human stuff. There's clattering in the kitchen. A purr mm-hmm. began at the reassuring noise. Okay, so there's a cat somewhere. And then the dinner was trembling below the paw. And then we're like, oh, it's a cat. Yes. So basically in this, a cat, eats... It kills the mouse in a pretty horrific way, just in a very not nice way. And then thinks about the other dinner, which is like the dinner humans that the humans are giving it, and then thinks that the humans are lovely things, but one day they'll hopefully figure out eating, because they don't know how to hunt. Which, I just thought this was a delightful little story of Cat's perspective.
Yeah, for me reading it, I don't know, it felt very unnerving.
Yeah.
Just the way that everything was being described from such a, like, foreign perspective.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
But I think, like, as I read it, I did catch on to that it was a cat for me. It took two different reads, but, like, overall, it's a really interesting way of showing us this scene, and I really like it for that.
Yeah, it definitely feels pretty alien. The narration has this very detached way of description, which I thought was very interesting.
Yeah. All right. Next up is Shin 7 with Let It Wake Up and Search the Wasteland.
So this is a very interesting story. We get this view of this excited girl on this junk planet, you know, the quintessential junk planet where it's a junkyard, except it's like planet-wide and there's like spaceships and other stuff. So this girl named Sririn is queen of the Hill of Scrap, and she's imagining a crowd, but it's mostly like scarecrows that she's constructed, basically. And she, like, really likes her hill. That's her hill. She's, like, filled it with stuff that she really likes. We really get this nice characterization of this character. Before we switch to a second perspective that's looking at the girl, where there's a moment of confusion as we try to figure out if this is, like, this girl looking at a different girl or, like, something else looking at a third girl or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it settles that it's a sort of AI, or at least some kind of alien perspective, that is looking at that girl. We get this, the perspective of this alien thing, which we eventually find out is like a slimy thing with a metal kind of crown on its head.
So,
very alien. And it kind of like telepathically speaks to the girl. And it's very interesting in how it's like pseudo narration, where it's actually I think my favorite part about it is that like it basically like it starts a connection to her thoughts, and immediately it's like personality changes, like it starts using like exclamation points and stuff. It's like the narration becomes like a cross between the alien thing's perspective and the girl's perspective, which I thought was interesting, and there's not really a differentiation between whose thoughts are whose.
Yeah.
Before, at the very end, it fully, like, gets another level of consciousness and is able to have, like, explicit thoughts.
Yeah. Honestly, I think I loved this one. Mostly, truthfully, for the very end, when they are juggling those two thoughts at the same time, I think it was done very well to where it was really hard to get lost there. And overall, again, I really like the perspective that the story is coming from. This like alien-esque perspective that's really set outside of the story, and I really love it.
Yeah, I thought it was lovely. Because this is just this delightful little. Both of these characters are wonderful. They're both like excited to meet each other, and that's like super cute. And like you get like their. Some of their motivations, you know, they just want friends. It's lovely.
Yeah. So thank you very much, Shin 7.
Mm-hmm. All right. So the next story we're going to discuss is
Ghost Pac-Man 4 with Untrained. Come on, boy. Come here.
Why would you say that? Oh,
because that's the
yes,
first.
Yes, it is. Okay, so this is an interesting story. It was some interesting feelings. So we get so there's two characters. There's James and Holly. Holly is approaching a creature it's described as a snake combined with a Komodo dragon, pale blue, mm-hmm. and with no eyes and a large toothy maw. And so it's like definitely like an alien sort of thing. And Holly's, like, treating it like a dog and, like, wanting to pet it and stuff. And, like, James is, like, legitimately really freaked out. Like, the thing is, like, I was picturing myself in that situation, and I would actually be, like, I've had nightmares where, like, someone was making a bad decision, and I couldn't do anything to stop them because they just didn't understand it was a bad decision. So this was like, nightmare fuel for me.
All of your worst fears wrapped into one.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. But it was interesting. One little thing that kind of took me back was that James's lines would go from, like really serious and like affecting, like, oh my god, holy shit, and then italics, Holly, please, I'm begging you, please, please stop this, where it's like, that's like sad.
Yeah.
And then ones where he's like cursing her, like, if she dies, you know, he'll do something dumb in heaven to her. So early on it's okay because then it's not as serious, but like later on, hold on, let me, if we get killed because of this, I'm punting you straight to hell when we reach heaven, and even Jesus will say it was freaking justified. Where it's like, that's a really, like, fun line, but it's not as, like, serious as, oh my god, please stop, yeah. Please, 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 please,
it's a,
you know?
It's a quick change in tones in the middle.
Yeah, so it's just, yeah, it was a little of a take back. But I really enjoyed it, this whole, like, Holly being completely oblivious and it, like, actually seeming like a real threat. Like, James's worry, like, actually really reached me. And I was left unsure if this was, like, oh, it's just a cute little animal thing. Or like, she's actually going to get eaten and die. And it's going to be horrible.
Exactly. And I mean, so. I think one of the major triumphs of this story is how the dialogue, which is spread throughout, is very telling of both of the characters, and how as it goes on, beyond like you just getting used to how they speak, you start to really understand the kind of connection they have with the other. And yeah, I think it's like done very well. I really liked it.
Right. Yeah. So I found it very interesting. So in the end, it's it seems to be mostly a good creature, where it's acting like a dog, and Holly can scratch the thing behind its head. Although it does also envelop James.
Yeah.
It bites on James, too. So a little, yeah, it's probably going to spit him out, but it is a little worrying. I found the ending a little ambiguous of, like, how bad it was, and if James is going to be okay. But, I enjoyed the story a lot.
I mean, personally, I've seen enough anime, right, to know for a shadow of a doubt that the slime's going to spit him right back out and become his best friend. That's just how it works. Probably. Either that, or he's going to slowly dissolve inside of the slime.
But in, like, a sexy way.
Yeah, in like, a PG-13 kind of way.
In a PG-13, but, like, Vor kind of way.
Oh, God. PG-13 Vor is the perfect band name.
Yeah, it's like Vor, but you're, like, fully clothed, and it's, like all the feelings you get are, like, romantic.
Yeah, so it's loving, and there's a lot of consent, 100%.
Yeah, and, like...
It's totally cool.
Like, it's really just, like, kissing, except you're also getting eaten, so...
Yeah, so, you know, it's sweet.
Yeah.
Next up is Calinero 985.
With The Inlet. This story is kind of a classic build-up to a short horror story. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it a lot. Again, reminds me of the Magnus Archives, just because all horror does that to me now.
all of them.
So, yeah, basically. We get the scene of these two characters, Perry and Frank... where Frank is offering a job for Perry to they're in Venezuela, and Perry just has to go to Venezuela in his boat and pick up a package that the feds don't want him to have. He's becoming a drug runner, and we get the assumption it's pretty good pay and it's like
smuggling
not that bad.
The drugs
back. Yeah, yeah, basically
common 9 to 5.
Yeah. So that's like the first half, and we kind of get some characterization of both of them and what kind of situation this is. And then, we cut to, Perry arriving at, the jungle of where he's supposed to be on the map. And he's like searching for the stuff, and it's like things are a little bit off. They don't match up the map exactly, so he's still struggling to find it. And the reason that the package wasn't picked up is that the last guy who went there was probably picked up by the authorities or something, and he hasn't, like, responded in a while. And so, you know, Perry's the backup, right? So he's going, and eventually he finds his way to the place, and he's getting slightly creeped out because there's, like, it feels like there's something out there. And then he sees eyes in the woods, but they're, like, silent and feline. And, I love the description of it. For me, it really actually felt scary of just, like, having these eyes follow you along. And you're in a boat, and you feel safe in your boat, but it's, like, the river is pretty small. And it's, like, the thing is, like, silent and moving quickly, basically. And then eventually... Perry makes it to the clearing where, like, the package is supposed to be, and there's the only thing that's really there is a boat that's been run aground, and its door is open, and there's a smell in the air. So we understand that that's the previous smuggler that was killed by whatever is in the woods. Yeah. And it's, like, a moment of pure fear, and Perry has to, like, quickly turn the boat around and, like, drive it out of there as quickly as possible. And it's pretty scary, but Perry makes the way just fine. Not wanting to know anything about the unknown anymore. That's that story.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think for this entire one, I was on the edge of my seat. Only because, like, it was so much of a slow burn. And they gave you pieces here and bits here, and you were basically figuring out what was going on along with this character. I think that's just a testament to the writer. Like, it was executed perfectly, and I really loved it for that.
Yeah, one, like, not like a criticism. It's like I just would have, like, preferred a different story choice. I would have preferred for Perry to, like, die at the end, or at the very least, like, get run aground. Like, Calinero, like, has this great setup of this log at the entrance of the river, basically.
Yeah.
So it's, like, it's mentioned at the beginning of the story, and it's brought back at the end where he, like, just barely, like, you know, doesn't hit it, right? Well, I would have liked for Perry to hit it, and then he has to deal with that. Yeah. I thought that might have been more interesting.
I mean, like, what I see was going on is that it was setting up so much. And yes, this, what it was setting up to didn't really happen, but I think I kind of like it more for that, because this story was just seeing the aftermath of something horrible, and it makes you ask so many questions as to what exactly did happen, questions that we don't have answers for. I think I just enjoyed it for what it was, because it could have definitely gone that route, and I found it pretty interesting that it didn't, in a sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I really love the imagery, especially as the panic grows. There's almost this, like, dreamlike vision of the beast or whatever it is following. It just occurs to me that we both wrote about beasts and boats. I guess that's what these words inspire.
Yeah, beasts and boats.
Beasts and boats. Yeah, so there's this, like, image of, like, running through the jungle. I mean, it's like the creature's running through the jungle, but it is definitely spooky in this primal fear. There of you know, knowing that something is chasing you in the woods but not really knowing how to escape it. So I really enjoyed the story.
Yeah, thank you very much for writing in.
Mm-hmm. The last story we're going to talk about this week is by Lost Carcassan,
and this is untitled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
okay. So in this story, we have this character named Alex, and is it a he? I just want, yeah. Alex is shouldering his way through the boardwalk. He's at the beach, but there's so many people there, and he's really bothered by them. And he's annoyed with all of them because he's come here for an important reason, because the sea is calling to him, because he's one of the few mages in the area. Mm-hmm. And the sea has, like, a big buildup of energy, like, right here, and so it's calling for him to come there and use it. And so he's arrived there, he's you know, he's going into the water, which is too cold for other people to be in, so he's, like, finally has a moment alone, and he starts to try to explore what the magic is, and he, like, fantasizes about, like, you know, being a real show-off and, like, using his magic in a show-offy way. And then he opens his eyes and realizes that everyone is screaming and running away and that the water has receded 100 feet. And so that's our first clue, and we like understand it, you know, a moment before the character does, which is always good, that a tsunami is coming. And we grasp the full implications of that, and it's spelled out for us afterwards, basically. We fully grasp it. Of course, the sea is putting energy here because there's a tsunami coming. Whether it's like just a byproduct of the tsunami, or maybe the sea will like wants Alex to do something about it, is unclear, and that's okay. We get the implication that after the scene, Alex is gonna try to hold off the tsunami all by himself.
Yeah, he's gonna conjure up some magic and unwave it.
Throw a couple of water balls.
Water versus water cancels out 100%.
Fireball, but it's water.
I think one thing that I like really liked was the whole daydreaming scene. Mostly because it gave you so much as to like who Alex was, right? And it really went in on this character. And also it seems very much so like something I would do if I had that much power. And be like, yo, I could stun on everyone, and they won't, and they couldn't do a single thing. But you don't, because you know, you have a obligation. Along with that, I also kind of liked a look into whatever kind of magic system this was. And apparently mages are very short. Like there aren't really that many, or not that many in this area. But that certain like things within nature can call to this mage. And I thought that was very interesting. We kind of want to know more about that aspect of the story.
Yeah, absolutely. I was also interested in like the differing water imagery that Alex talks about. So I found this very interesting, and I was, you know, I really like this character Alex. He's, you know, your classic begrudging hero. You know, he doesn't like any of these people, these crowds, but he'll save them if he has to.
Because he has to.
And, you know, he does end up getting what he wants, which is to use magic in a cool way. Let's just hope he doesn't die.
Yeah, that would suck. Well, all right. Thank you so much for every single last person that submitted a story. Without you, this wouldn't be a podcast whatsoever.
If you submitted, just a reminder again, every time you write, your chance of getting selected goes up. So don't think of it as a wasted opportunity. Your chance went up. And if you didn't write, please consider doing so in the future. You just have to sit down for 30 minutes and use the four words that we're going to announce, or use three of the four words that we're going to announce at the end of the podcast.
Exactly. But first, let us thank everyone that did write in this week.
Mm-hmm.
Starting with Captain Rhino.
Stuck in Reddit Factory.
Killinat.
Kausublu V2.
Sarah Penguin.
Ace of Sword.
Shin 7.
Zakatigi.
Ghost Pac-Man 4.
Meteora 22.
Kalanero 985.
Torsion Module.
And Lost Carcassin. Thank you so much for every single last person that did submit. You make my heart proud.
Yeah, absolutely. But the one thing is, I think it would be really good to see some more cross writer interaction. So after you write your story, consider leaving a comment on someone else's. Every time you do that, it encourages people to do it and reciprocate. Which is a really good way to get feedback on your own pieces. You know, we can only give feedback on five story a podcast, and you know, we're not even going to get everything on each story ourselves. Yeah. So it's really helpful to see, you know, people helping each other out. So consider doing that if you haven't already.
Exactly, because yourself as a writer do deserve people to tell you what they think about. It's the only way to grow as a writer, so you should extend that olive branch to your fellow writer.
Hell yeah. All right, so if you want to be like with these wonderful people and write, you can go to /r/do the right thing leave your story in a comment.
Exactly. And also, if you want to figure out what the words are as soon as possible, you can see all that on our Twitter, which is @writethingcast.
If you are not comfortable posting your story online, or you actually just have a question or something and you want us to let us know, you can send an email to us at writethingcast@gmail.com.
Exactly. And if you want to support us, maybe physically, maybe spiritually, maybe monetarily, you can always send a couple of bucks over to the Doof Patreon. Every dollar there will help us keep on making what we do, and also you will get a whole host of benefits. One of them being is basically being able to vote on all of the stories that were submitted to the Doof the Right Thing contest.
Yeah, so the Doof the Right Thing contest, which again ends the day that this is posting.
Exactly.
And of course, there will be more in the future. This is just the first one, and we're aiming to do it every 3 months.
Quarterly.
That's how quarters work, right?
Yeah, three.
Ish. We're very excited for this to go through. This contest was only able to happen because of you, of the lovely patrons that we have. That's the only reason that we're able to give back to the communities that form around the Doof Network.
Exactly.
So, it's the only reason that we're able to give out prizes and money and, you know, give recognition back to the people that participate in here so much.
Yeah. And then also, on Doof, what is Doof doing right now, Matthias?
I know that the Doofcast just released an episode on Young Justice, the first season of that show.
So
you could go watch that.
What did they say? Did they like it? Did they hate it?
Yeah, they mostly liked it, yeah.
Oh, thank God. That's one of the most slept on shows I've ever heard of.
For sure, for sure. And of course, Deep Impact, and we've got Warda doing amazing things. I do want to remind you guys that in March, Deep Impact is doing a 24-hour live stream called All Packed Up, because that's been when they'll finish. That'll be on March 6th and March 7th if you are in the United States. And, you know, Jarvis and I will be on there a little bit. Scott and Matt will be on there to discuss Pact as well. So Scott's finally going to finish reading Pact after so long.
And also, I will make sure to not read Pact.
Yeah, so actually what we're planning to do is to do a, like, Do the Right Thing Deep Impact crossover, kind of, where we'll write Pact fan fiction. And read it on air. And Jarvis is gonna write Pact fanfiction too, even though he hasn't read it at all.
Exactly.
So that'll be a good time.
As of right now, all I know is that the main character is homeless.
Homeless. Yeah, that's all you know about Pact, yes.
Yeah, the whole thing. So I'm looking
forward to
seeing
what
they come up with, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really looking forward to it. It's gonna be a really good time. So that's all we have about Doof. Is there anything else that we need to talk about? I don't think so.
No, but I think one thing that we should talk about is next week's words, which...
Yeah, that's a really good idea.
...are... Rely. Towering. Inflict. And word.
So it's rely, as in to rely on someone else. Towering, as in very tall. And it's actually inflect, which is
inflect.
Like... Like, you can inflect your voice, like, to make it, like, higher and lower. Mm-hmm. So, like, this is an inflection or something. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't really know. You probably should look up the definition to have a little bit better. And then word, as in, like, the things
word.
That I'm saying, but also, like, word.
Mm. Yes. Mm. So, back in the day, I used to be a miner, right? I used to spend my days to nights to weekends picking at these rocks. And there was no one else that I could rely on, because I was the only one in the entire city that was tall and towering enough to hit the hardest rocks as hard as I possibly can. And I didn't speak a word. I was a silent hero, and my silence was the most telling inflection.
That's pretty good.
All right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I lived in a house, and it was, like, really, really tall. In fact, it was towering, but that was probably to its detriment, because I couldn't actually rely on it standing up. So it actually, it fell over, and when someone asked me how I was doing, You know, I gave them one word, and it was inflected, and I said, "Fine," even though my house had fallen down.
Can you say that one more time for me?
Say what?
What was your inflection?
Let me try that again. The inflected words were do the right thing.
Do the right thing.
Thanks for joining us.
Goodbye.
See you. Get out of here. That's the end of the show. We told you the words. Get out of here.
Why are you hanging around?
I love you guys.
We don't want you.
Goodbye.